Hey, thank you to Helix for sponsoring this podcast. Adam has had his Helix mattress for almost a year now, and he's loving it. It's actually hard to get him up. In fact, he won't stop talking about it. You'll understand what we mean when he goes into detail. Thank you for the detail, Adam, later on the episode. But for now, we want to tell our listeners about a special deal going on. Our Sleepy Time Pal Helix is offering up to 30% off all mattress orders and, as if that's not enough, two free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/Paula. That's helixsleep.com/Paula. This is their best offer yet, and I'll bet it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now. The spread of misinformation has fueled our cultural divide and increased our collective anxiety about the future. Tackling misinformation isn't a simple task, but it's important. And that's why I'm so excited to tell you about Conspirituality, a podcast that's dismantling New Age cults, wellness grifters, and conspiracy mad yogis.
On the show, a journalist, a cult researcher, and a philosophical skeptic walk into a bar, and the bartender says, no, it's not that old joke. They dive deep into current events such as RFK Jr.'s involvement in mainstreaming dangerous anti-vax rhetoric. They crowdsource, research, analyze, and dream up answers to the problem with, get this, proven science as their ultimate guiding light.
I highly recommend you check out Conspirituality's fascinating episodes on creating comedy in the MAGAverse with Jordan Klepper or RFK Jr. flirting with body fascism.
And you've listened to a bunch of them at this point, Paula, I know, and you tell me you love it.
I do. They're fascinating, and my favorite part is they use, wait for it, proven science.
And if
there's any kids listening, that's a class we used to take. Proven yep. science as their ultimate guiding light. I love that.
From exploring cults to analyzing our cultural and political landscape, the Conspirituality podcast will help you stay informed about misinformation and help you resist fear tactics. Find Conspirituality on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Coming to you live from the Ray Horseman Studio in North Hollywood, California, it's Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, your comedy field guide to life. On tonight's show, writer's block. Ever had it? Blank page. Words don't come. Syllables dry up. Stuck. Mute. Silent. Nothing. That's our show for tonight. Nobody Listens to Paula... Oh, wait! We have someone here who can get us unblocked. Francesca Gaccio is a graduate writing coach at USC's Annenberg School of Communications. She'll tell us what to do when writer's block strikes. Speaking of something striking, sharks are out along the coast of Massachusetts. Jaws is back, and we're not talking about the movie. And we have the stunning result of Frontier Communications contest to put down your smartphone and use a flip phone for an entire week. The results are in, and we're shocked. I'm Adam Felber, the conversational lifeguard on this show, trying to keep topics from floating out to sea. And now, please welcome the woman who talks her way beyond the boy every time, Paula Poundstone!
Well, thank you so much!
Oh, welcome, Paula. And thank you to tonight's house band returning champion, percussionist Omar Leyva. Omar, thank you for being here, man.
Fantastic.
With a bigger rig this time than last. Now, Paula, the pod dog is with us here at Ray Horseman Studio, and you've thoughtfully brought a squeaky toy.
I did.
For him to play with.
A listener named Stephanie Mitchell. Sent me this. She got a... there we go. That's
nice. Nice and
huh?
squeaky.
Yeah. It's a Donald Trump stuffed toy that apparently her cat... wouldn't have anything to do with.
Her cat rejected a toy.
Yeah, so she thought Captain Crinkle would enjoy playing with it during the show.
As soon as I heard that sound, she said she would.
Yeah. This is before Captain Crinkle could talk, this was her first word.
Yeah, as a baby.
Yeah.
You would touch her and that sound would come out.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I didn't bring the pod puppy this week. I brought my dog Sirius. Sirius, come here.
And Sirius has become, in recent years, kind of serious.
He has his little, you know... He lives with a puppy, and so he's exhausted all the time. Do you want this Donald Trump
dog? He has zero interest in the Trump.
Yeah, no, he's...
Well, give it to Captain Crinkle, and she'll make our life miserable.
I'll take it.
Bonnie says, I'll take it.
No, he might... He's rejected Trump.
He just walked away.
You know why? Because he supports Elizabeth Warren. That's why.
Well, the dog vote has gone heavily Democratic and heavily for Elizabeth Warren for the last few years. So
yeah,
not surprising.
Yeah, I'm really proud of his politics. You know, you mentioned that sometimes I take a conversation. You know, sometimes I
digress. Sometimes you search for words.
I have a problem not talking.
Yes.
It's a problem that I... So I was just at
You don't not talk.
I talk a lot. So I was at this convention thing for public radio, for the people who raise money for public radio. And my boss, Doug Berman, said to me, because I was walking through the crowd, and he said, okay, if you need, you know, like, if you need to have someone not talk to you anymore,
right,
scratch your head so that I will know... And I'll come and say, oh, Paula, we have to go this way. You know, it's very considerate of him.
I'm guessing you didn't intentionally scratch your head that
entire
night.
I never, ever scratched my head. But I realized a lot of times people were dying to get away from me.
Everybody else was scratching their head.
It was the other way around.
Yeah,
Doug
should have explained that.
It was like a lice infestation at the...
I've been with you at the end of, like, Wait, Don't Tell Me shows and the autographing sessions. And you spend, I would say, 300 to 400% more time per listener than I do. I just run out of things to say, and you victimize them.
They are often trapped, stunned. I always feel like a spider wrapping my...
Slowly wrapping your conversational web.
I give them the stuff to sort of tire them out, and then I begin to wrap my web around them. And a lot of times
people,
they have to make a human chain and pull one another from
I've seen that.
Clutches.
I've seen the audience extractions thing that they have to do.
Yeah, once people realize what's going on, then they join together as a group. I just thought it was funny that it never even occurred to me to scratch my head, but I did see audience members and people that had wanted to take pictures with me sidestepping slowly away.
Maybe she won't see me.
Yeah.
All right. So I want to change the subject for a second.
You do?
Your dog has gone nowhere near the Trump toy.
No.
Where has it gone? Bonnie has it, right? Oh,
no,
good.
It's right here. It's right. It's right by my side.
Yeah. You know, Trump is one of the first presidents. I'm digressing now. In a long time, I don't know how many years. Somebody should look it up. To not have a dog. There has not been a president without a dog in the Oval Office
for
a long time.
They cannot get a dog to spend time with Trump.
They're going to have to put like Mike Pence in a dog suit.
They would have to wire the White House lawn with those electric things so that when the dog
and
steps
even
over
so,
the edge.
You'd see buzzing dogs walking down Pennsylvania Avenue.
Yeah, it just looks bad. It looks really bad when the president can't keep a dog with him.
But speaking of Pennsylvania Avenue, I'm going to segue that over to Massachusetts Avenue, which is based on the state of Massachusetts, because Paula, you're heading to Massachusetts for a vacation.
I'm going to Massachusetts on vacation in a couple more weeks, but I got to tell you, I keep seeing on the news that the Cape Cod waters have been invaded by great white sharks. Now, I don't vacation in Cape Cod. I vacation on the North Shore.
Which is not that close to Cape Cod.
It's not that far for a shark, I don't think.
Well, I'm guessing the sharks are in the south part, like the Hyannis part of Cape Cod.
I don't know. They didn't.
They'd have to swim all the way around the Cape.
Yeah.
And there's so many tasty, tasty tourists in Martha's Vineyard. They would never make it around the Horn of Provincetown.
They could swim all the way around.
And up to the North Shore where, like,
they could swim all the way around the Cape. What are you kidding me? That's what it does. It swims and it eats.
Right.
That's all sharks do.
Yeah.
And right now they've seen, apparently, the movie of Jaws has been re-released underwater and is inspiring.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Copycat crimes.
Yeah, exactly. Dun, 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 dun. Usually when I go to Singing Beach in Manchester and I swim out to the buoy multiple times on each trip with great pride, I do
Manchester
that.
Manchester by the Sea.
Manchester by the Sea.
I'm going to say that's so far up there that you could probably swim without worrying about great white sharks.
Yeah.
No, you're right.
You've never really liked me that much. And so what you're doing is you're trying to get me.
I'm trying to get an episode of Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone because she's shark food and this is my podcast now.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what the title's going to be.
I hope everyone's making note of what's taking place now.
You can swim. It's fine.
Yeah. Is this okay? It's not as bad as the, you know, girl who encouraged her friend to off himself, but this is damn near. Yeah,
I'm just
go in
saying,
the water.
Go for a swim. It's summertime, funner time. Come on.
Yeah, kick your feeties.
Yeah, kick your feet. Don't put a Band-Aid on that thing. You'll be fine.
Yeah. But, you know, in the past when I've swam out there, you know, I have a lot of friends who won't go with me, but right. maybe that has nothing to do with that. But I have a lot of friends who are afraid to swim out to the buoy, and it's never really troubled me. But now, did you see on the CNN website the other day, they right. showed a film, and I don't know if this was a Cape Cod one or a Florida one, maybe. It was shot from like a drone or an airplane overhead. Mm. There were people waiting, W-A-D-I-N-G, right. waiting in the water. They were only up to like their thighs uh-huh. or their waist. And a shark swam like feet away from them yeah. and then turned. And you couldn't tell the reaction of the people because you're seeing the tops of their heads.
Right.
But
they might not have seen it.
They might not have seen it, but I saw it. That's my point. Well, how many times when I swim to the buoy are there sharks coming right up near me and swimming away?
Well, I'm going to say maybe a lot of times. I've done some scuba diving. And when you get your scuba certification, they let you know that there's really only two kinds of sharks on the planet that you really should worry about swimming near.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, one of those kinds is the great white that
it's
will be with you on vacation.
It's the great white shark, yeah.
Apparently, like, seven of them have been sighted in the area around Cape Cod. Seven individual.
Well, this is exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, but again, I think they're in the south of Cape Cod. And,
right.
and you and I
okay,
had an argument
but you know what happens?
Yesterday.
Oh, we did yeah. have an argument.
Yes.
It's not the first time.
All right, I'll get to
okay,
that in
you
a
know
minute,
what
I guess.
No, because... There's, listen to me, there's seven sharks,
right.
okay?
Yeah.
And apparently there's four males and three females. And so what happens is the-
Wait a minute.
They pair off,
okay.
right, it, lovingly, they pair off.
Uh-huh.
And then that one lonely shark
right.
heads north. That's what happens.
You're saying he's like a shark incel.
He has no-
Yeah,
he has no partner, uh-huh. and he loses interest in the because there's nothing worse than being with your friends when they're making out. And
right.
so he's like, you know what? I'm out of here. And they head north.
I'm heading to Manchester.
Yeah, I'm going to Manchester by the sea.
I hear and then, it's nice there.
Yeah. yeah. And then they go, and does anybody have a watch? Is this Paula's vacation right now?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen.
I guess that's what you're worried about.
Yeah, I am yeah. worried about it. Yeah. I don't think I can swim the way I used to now.
Let
I think
me get
I'm
to the argument we were having yesterday.
We were having an argument about where Jaws... was located.
Where Jaws takes place.
Yeah,
yes.
and it takes place in Massachusetts.
You think it's Martha's Vineyard. You think Amity Island is essentially Martha's Vineyard.
I think it's
And what I was saying was, as a Long Island boy, and you're a Massachusetts girl,
yes.
I was saying, no, I grew up on Long Island, and we were all really proud of the fact that Amity Island was near Orient Point or Montauk. It was a Long Island-based book, movie.
No, here's the thing. I think the book was based there, but the movie was in... in Massachusetts.
You might be right.
I know that I'm right.
Okay. I know that the movie was filmed up there in yeah, Massachusetts.
Because that's what it's about.
No,
it's about
it was because
Massachusetts.
Long Island was too crowded at that point to shoot Amity Island on Long Island. But you know what? Ken Lezebnik looked this up.
Thank goodness.
So here we go.
Yeah.
The novel establishes the fictional town of Amity on Long Island.
Uh-huh.
Peter Benchley read about a 4,500-pound great white shark caught in Montauk by shark hunter Frank Mundus. Who inspired the book.
Uh-huh.
The movie...
Frank Mundus.
The movie doesn't identify where Amity Island is, but it was filmed on Martha's Vineyard because it was, quote, a vacation area that was lower middle class enough so that an appearance of a shark would destroy the tourist business. Carl Gottlieb wrote the screenplay.
I knew that Carl Gottlieb wrote the screenplay. And by the way, the movie destroyed the tourist business that year. No one went in the water that year.
That's true. That was 1976 or 75, I
yeah,
think.
Yeah, I remember because I was so dry.
Really? Oh, yeah. Well, it's going to be like that this summer.
Yeah,
for
it
you.
Is. Yeah, I don't know what I'm going to...
But I got to feel like maybe we should talk to Carl Gottlieb, but it kind of feels like I'm right about this.
No, you're not right about this.
It does.
I'm going to end up hula hooping all summer as a result. Not all summer. I take that back. During my week of vacation, I'm going to hula hoop on the beach.
Oh, yeah?
Which should...
Oh, that stuff attracts the bats.
I was going to say, for the amount of tourists that stay, even though there are sharks, I should probably drive the rest of them away by my hula hooping.
Hula hooping? Do you have one of those whistling
By the way,
hoops?
It's back to front, not side to side, hula hooping.
Back to front nuts?
Back to front, not side to side.
Oh, I see.
Not
okay.
nuts. Back to front, not side to side.
What are you saying to me?
To make a hula hoop go,
you want to move your hips
yeah.
back to front,
yeah.
not side to side.
Yeah. Try to stay on topic.
I'm really sorry.
Did you think I was talking about sharks? It's back to front,
no
not side
idea.
To side.
No
like
idea.
Like when
honestly.
You see a shark. Yeah. I was telling you shark survival methods. Adam,
yeah.
when you see a shark, wiggle your hips back to front, not side to side.
You know how they say that sharks, if they stop swimming, they die because
yeah.
they drown? I feel like for you, It's talking.
That's why.
Like, if I made you be quiet for like 5 minutes, God forbid.
Yeah.
You die.
That's why I put the blanket over my head.
Oh, in the plane?
On the airplane, so yeah. I can just keep mumbling.
Fantastic. Hey. Just keep doing that as I change topics.
Yeah.
Paula, we have an update on the Frontier Communications contest you entered to win the privilege to turn off your smartphone for a week and only use a flip phone.
Tony Anita Hull has an
late
update on the update.
Yes.
The original update was that the day that we were supposed to find out, they were supposed to announce the winner, had come and gone.
Yes.
And certainly I hadn't gotten my call the way I do on
And you'd written a great
Pulitzer
application.
Prize Day.
A great application,
I wrote a fantastic
you
application.
You wanted to get a flip phone and a survival kit to use no smartphones for a week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And don't you get paid? Don't you...
It was a $1,000 prize, I think.
Woo-hoo! Yeah.
But you didn't get it.
I could spend $1,000 on shark repellent and jump in the water. And
shark repellent, like first scene of the Batman movie from the 60s.
Oh, I don't remember that. Yeah. So I got no response whatsoever from the Frontier phone people.
So we assumed
people.
You'd lost.
Naturally, we assumed I'd lost.
Yeah, I was assuming even before that.
Yeah.
So, but Tony Anita Hull has an update.
Because you're in the negative club. That's why.
I am negative, yes. But Tony Anita Hull has an update, which is that they got so many applications, they haven't chosen a winner yet.
But here's the thing. Tony called them, I guess, on their website or something. They had a contact. So she contacted them.
And they had to use one of those old-fashioned crank phones to answer.
She spoke with them, and they said, oh, we had so many. She said, you know, I work with Paula Poundstone. She has a podcast. She mentioned blah, 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 right? And they said, oh, well, we had so many applicants that we decided to give out more than one prize, and we haven't, therefore, decided yet because we had this overwhelming response. But what they didn't say was, oh, yes, we have Paula's right here.
No, they didn't say that.
No, they didn't say that.
I don't know if they've noticed that you've applied. Because I think a company like Frontier Communications, once they see that Paula Poundstone with her mighty podcast and radio reach has applied, they should understand all the cross-promotional possibilities in making you the winner of this contest.
We're going to make them somebody.
Yeah.
Do you think, how many people do you think work at front? Tony, Anita Hull, could you hear people in the background when you talk to them? I mean,
did it sound like a crowded office?
Did it sound like a call center where there are tons of people?
Or was,
was
one
it just,
guy?
you know, Emily, line one?
Yeah.
Lots of people.
There were lots of people.
Like lots of people.
So it was a humming hive of business.
Right, but it might have been one of those
business.
Call centers where they answer the phone for, like, multiple businesses.
Yeah, that
could have been one of those, like,
East
Asian call centers where it was, like, there's 90 people in that room, and they're answering for, like, 150 corporations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. It could have been, Hi, are you calling for Frontier? What is it called? Frontier?
Communications.
Communications or...
Enzo's Sardines.
Or Water Damage Restoration.
Right.
Or Enzo's
I'm gonna let you keep
sardines.
Going. Yeah.
or
you are a master improvisationalist.
Yeah. Well, what happens to me is ideas just flood in.
Oh, it's amazing.
Like when your
they
Volkswagen goes into a lake and, you know, and you're afraid to open the window because the water's just gonna flood in so much that you won't be able to get yourself out. That's
that
how my brain works.
Is that a Chappaquiddick reference?
No. Boy, you can read a room.
You know, everybody cringed.
I
guess it's too soon 50 years ago.
Our guests tonight are several members of the Kennedy family. Wow. Thank you, Adam.
I apologize. Hey, Paula. You know, every once in a while we get a new advertiser that I get super excited about. And I have to say, just because of the circumstances of my life, right now I'm really excited about our new advertiser, Quince, of Quince.com, the clothing provider.
Not to be mistaken for Quince from Midsummer Night's Dream. And let me just say this, and maybe it's not important to an advertisement, but when I was in the fourth grade, our class put on a production of A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Okay.
And I played Peter Quince. There's the connection.
One of the mechanicals. That's a great connection. Also, yes, has nothing to do with this, which is that Quince is an online clothing store. And as you know, Paula, I've lost a little weight lately.
Oh, right.
75 pounds, yeah. So I literally have no clothes that are in my size until I just ordered some stuff at Quince. And I figured, like, here's a chance for me to create a new look for myself. A whole new image.
And how's it going?
Not bad. I mean, the clothes are fantastic. I know that you ordered some too. What I got is the Comfort Stretch Traveler 5-pocket pants. And I got and I got the 100% European linen shirt, and it looks breezy and it fits beautifully. And these are like premium pieces of clothing that are selling for like, you know, $30 a piece or starting at $30 at quince.com. It's awesome. I look good.
I ordered the brushed lounge jogger.
Ooh.
And, you know, I put them on when I came back from New York. I pulled them on, and I swear to you, okay, this is not scientific because I was tired already.
Right.
But they were so soft and so comfortable that honestly, like right as I got them up to my waist, I think my eyes closed. They're so, it's a softness. It's a kind of softness that I don't think I've ever experienced in a garment, honestly.
You know, my drawstring European linen trousers are a little bit like that too. Like so comfortable that I just want to hang out with myself.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And they're European. Keep that in mind.
They are so European. And you can get those kind of, you can get washable silk tops. You can get 14 karat gold jewelry and like all these accessories.
Quince sells a lineup of timeless pieces that keep their customers looking effortlessly chic year after year. I'm not certain that I look chic, but certainly if I did, it's not going to take a lot of effort.
I now look chic and I feel pretty great. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabric. It's all good as far as I can see.
Is it my imagination or do they cut out the middleman?
They cut out the middleman, Paula Poundstone.
I love it when they cut out the middleman. That's the thing, they cut out the middleman. That's fantastic.
So be like me and Paula. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/nobody for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/nobody to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/nobody. And honestly, I look fantastic. Paula, you won't be able to keep your hands off me.
Oh, I can't wait. And don't think that if you had to return something, don't think you're sending it to a middleman because they cut out the middleman.
They cut out the middleman. That's quince.com/nobody. And if you're going to do it anyway,
use our code.
Hey, Paula, it's been almost a year now since I got my Helix mattress. And as you remember, there was some drama surrounding Helix mattresses.
Because
First sponsored us, Bonnie took the mattress and she's been loving it. But finally, I got my chance to get a Helix mattress and I sleep so well. I mean, the family bed is where we all gather. We watch movies in our room occasionally and everybody just piles on it and it's comfy. And yet when one person hops on, the other half of the mattress doesn't fly up. I'm a fan.
Well, you know, Adam, everybody is unique and everyone sleeps differently. That's why Helix has several different mattress models to choose from, each designed for specific sleep positions and feel preferences. Models with memory foam layers to provide optimal pressure relief if you sleep on your side. Models with a more responsive foam to cradle your body for essential support in stomach and back sleeping positions. Plus, enhanced cooling features to keep you from overheating at night. And if your spine needs some extra TLC, they got you. Every Helix mattress has a hybrid design combining individually wrapped steel coils in the base with premium foam layers on top. It is the perfect combination of comfort and support.
I agree with that last bit. I don't get all the technical stuff about the mattress, but it is soft and supportive. Helix offers 20 unique mattresses, the award-winning Lux, which I got, and ultra-premium Elite Collections, the Helix Plus, a mattress designed for big and tall sleepers, and the Helix Kids mattress, designed for growing bodies and endorsed by child sleep experts, and my daughter now wants one. So, how will you know which Helix mattress works best for you and your body? You go to their website, take the Helix sleep quiz, and you find your perfect mattress match in under 2 minutes.
You know, when you said you can't follow all the technical stuff, it's really not that technical. You know, no matter what way you sleep, they have a mattress that will support and comfort you. How hard is that?
You know, when you say it that way, it seems a lot simpler. I take it back. That's my boner.
And your personalized mattress is shipped straight to your door, free of charge. And Helix knows there's no better way to test out a new mattress than by sleeping on it in your own home. That's why they offer a 100-night trial and a 10 to 15-year warranty to try out your new Helix mattress.
Well, I like that there's a warranty, but they can pry that mattress from my cold, dead hands. I took the sleep quiz. I was matched with the Helix Midnight Lux. I got the Lux. And I love it. It is such an upgrade from my old mattress.
You know, I think Bonnie got the midnight lux.
She did.
Too.
Yeah.
You're not here. Don't want to take Adam's word for it? Well, you got Bonnie's word. Helix has been awarded the number one mattress picked by GQ and Wired magazine. It's even recommended by multiple leading chiropractors and doctors of sleep medicine as a go-to solution for improving your sleep. Your sleepy time pal Helix is offering up to 30% off all mattress orders and two free pillows for our listeners.
That's a lot, and it's already not that expensive a mattress. Go to helixsleep.com/Paula.
That's helixsleep.com/Paula.
This is their best offer yet. It's fantastic. It won't last long.
With Helix, better sleep starts now. Well, not right now.
And if you're going to get it anyway,
use our code. Adam, you know I have a house full of cats and a couple of big dogs. So I have this one cat who every night likes to stand in the hallway and yowl. And he has kind of a little bit like me because of allergies. I don't know why he has it, but his name is Theo, and he has a really gravelly voice. So it's hard to describe it. I can't do a good impression, but it's a little dusty, gravelly voice. Okay, so earlier I was laying on the living room floor because I'm exhausted, and I'm wearing a nylon fiberfill vest. As I'm laying on the floor, Theo shoves his head through one sleeve of the vest and crawls up and is now stuck inside in between my back and the vest and is yowling because he can't get out. And then finally his head comes out the other sleeve and he goes out. What's not to love? That's what I say. What is not to love?
Which brings me to this. Today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program.
Your pet is part of your family, you know that already, and you want the best for them no matter what. But vet bills can really add up. Go ahead, ask me. That's why you should check out pet insurance. And with ASPCA Pet Health Insurance, you can focus on the care your pet deserves and cover what matters most.
The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. That's a lot of pets.
True.
They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are.
Because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account.
To explore coverage, visit ASPCAPetInsurance.com/Paula. That's ASPCA. We spell that ASPCA. PetInsurance.com/Paula. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance. And if you're going to do it anyway,
use our code.
Guys. All right, let's move on then. Speaking of hotel soap, that reminds me of hematology. Now, Paula, we were referenced in the Mediterranean Journal of Hematology and Infectious Diseases. In fact,
no,
you were.
I was referenced.
Poundstone was referenced.
Was it P. Poundstone? Well, what part of that is you? You said we were referenced.
Well, I was just... yeah, you're right. Got me. I tried to insert myself into hematological history, and you caught me, Paula Poundstone.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah, that was a Freudian slip, I guess.
Yeah, boy.
Damn you, Paula, for getting the hematological attention. Anyway, listener Tom Dean was able to break through and figure out for us, because I guess he has references to his journal, why you were mentioned. He referred us...
Well, I was contacted by... academia something 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 that sends me emails when my name is mentioned in apparently educational journals of some sort.
And so you were mentioned in the Mediterranean Journal of Hematology.
So they said that I was, but it turns out P. Poundstone was mentioned.
Right. And I was going to read that right here.
Good. What'd they say?
Here's what they said. because we thought maybe it was you. Maybe there was something called Poundstone Syndrome.
Well, the other thing I thought was, I'm just so busy. I work so hard. And it, I feel tired all the time. And it may be that I'm getting up at night like I'm sleepwalking and doing hematology work. That's a possibility.
It's a lively possibility.
Because anyway, I'm exhausted
apparently that's
all
not the
time,
case. This
Adam.
Was citation 26 in the article with the very catchy title, Forgive Me, Ghost of My Father, but my pronunciation is going to be bad. It's called Tenofovir as Rescue Therapy Following Clinical Failure to Lamivudine in Severe Acute Hepatitis B.
Lamivudin.
Thank you. Wow, you fell asleep and said Lamivudin. Did you know that?
Oh, my God. I just dozed off for a second.
Wow. Well, that citation notes the work of several scientists whose two-year, quote, assessment of entecavir resistance in lamivudine refractory hepatitis B virus patients reveals different clinical outcomes depending on the resistance substitution's presence. And one of those scientists on that cited work is P. Poundstone.
P. Poundstone.
Yeah. Now, here's where it gets interesting for me.
Yeah.
When we were talking about this yesterday, you casually said something along the lines of, well, I guess that could be my sister, Patricia Poundstone, who's a molecular biologist.
No, she's not a molecular biologist. She's a biochemist.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. You got her confused.
But it's almost definitely her, because we looked it up, and that P. Poundstone reference is indeed a reference to Patricia Poundstone.
Yeah, that could be her. Now
what do you mean could be?
Well, we called her Patty.
Okay. Now, I'm guessing you're not super in touch with Patty these days?
No, I haven't talked to her in a while, and I don't read any of her research.
Now, what's the age difference between you and Patty?
Well, how do you mean that?
How much older or younger than you is Patricia?
She's a couple years older than me, but maturity-wise...
You're way older.
I am way older.
So immature.
She's very immature. But she is a biochemist.
Okay.
And, you know, she may be keeping herself young with some of her work.
It's quite possible.
Yeah. So, it hadn't occurred to me. At first, when I got the thing on my email saying, you know, there's this mention of you in this journal, I thought for sure it was me.
Wouldn't it even have occurred to you that there's a biochemist in your family whose name is also P. Poundstone, who it might be?
No.
I feel like I met a sister of yours once.
No, I don't think so.
No?
No, you might have. I don't think so.
Okay.
Not an aunt.
Okay. Ooh,
I shudder.
Wow. Okay. All right.
All the women on my mother's side of the family chewed snuff. So
okay.
Did the aunt sound like this? Hey, Adam, how are you?
No.
Because they hold it in their mouth with their tongue. Did she say this to you? Did she say, Adam, come give me some sugar?
Wow, that's definitely not the person I met. I feel like I met a relative of yours at a ping pong party about 6 or 7 years ago.
No, in fact, this aunt might have been in that journal.
Right.
Look, I got some blood.
Okay. I feel like...
See that? That's hepatitis B.
Okay, so that's your snuff-chewing aunt with hepatitis you were just doing an impression
of. She used to have a big Clabber Girl can or chock full of nuts can that she'd spit her gross...
They really did chew snuff?
Oh, it's disgusting. And then she'd say, don't kick my can over. You didn't kick her can over. You kicked her can over, you had to move to a new house. It was repulsive.
Wow.
Yeah, so she's probably in that journal.
Probably.
It could have been my sister.
I'm not
really sister.
Okay,
but there could be another P. Poundstone. We're not the only Poundstones on the planet.
You're among the only Poundstones on the planet.
No, there's other Poundstones.
Really?
Oh, they get in touch with me all the time.
Do they? Wow.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of hotel soap, though, you've been bringing up vocabulary words. What have you got this week?
I have a vocabulary word this week. Let's see. Badinage.
Badinage.
No, badinage. That's
badinage.
What it,
badinage. Oh, badinage, yeah.
Oh, bullshit. Badinage.
It is what you and I engage in.
Yeah, badinage.
All the time.
Is a noun, Bonnie, that means good-natured teasing or raillery or banter. Well, you and me engage in raillery.
Yes.
Yeah.
And banter.
Yeah, and banter. But this badinage thing is really new for us.
Yeah, right.
I'm enjoying it, though. I'm enjoying the badinage.
So you want to use badinage in a sentence?
Oh, darn it. Where is my sentence of it? I had one.
Ken Lezebnik is leaning forward to show you your sentence.
Ken, where is my... Oh, thank you.
The keeper of sentences.
Where did it go?
Has taken out his voluminous keychain.
Adam and and I engage in a good deal of badinage on our podcast.
There it is, in a sentence. Absolutely. That's fantastic.
Yeah, badinage. It's a great... It looks a little bit like bandage.
It does.
Yeah.
But it sounds a little bit like banter, which is a good way to remember it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like banter, bandage.
A banter bandage.
Yeah.
Sometimes badinage. What I feel like I need at the end of a podcast here.
Oh, yeah. Because for you, it's not good natured. You come out swinging, man.
Really?
Yeah. Your badinage is whoo.
Wow. I feel like I'm having a good time, but I guess I'm being too aggressive.
No.
All right. Well, badinage. We'll see what we can use that
tonight.
It's
going to come up over and over again.
I'm sure
tonight.
It is. Also badinage. Coming up, Charles Bukowski said, writing about writer's block is better than not writing at all. Writing coach Francesca Gaccio. Is it Gaccio? Gaccio. I got it right. Is here to talk us through writer's block. Sharpen your pencils and get ready to write when we return on Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone.
Omar nice.
Leyva. This is one of my favorite house bands ever, I gotta say. Having him back, it's great to have you back, Omar. Look at that, a little bit of sleigh bells.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Paula, you're writing a book.
I'm struggling to write a book.
You're right. This is your third book.
And then I also wrote 3 math workbooks with my high school math teacher. So technically, it would be my 6th book.
If you count math workbooks, yeah.
And I do.
And I don't.
For each one, I wrote a little. For each page, had a little story where I created characters.
Oh, then
for the word problems.
Okay.
No, it's very well. You were thinking I was just saying like 2 + 2, like that was the writing.
More or less.
Yeah. No. Yeah, no.
No. Okay.
I didn't really do the math part.
Okay.
I wrote stories. Anyways, yes, I'm.
So you're
working
writing
on
your third or sixth book, depending on how you score it.
Let me just make this more succinct. I'm struggling to write my third book.
Okay. It took you how long to write the first book?
It took me 9 years to write the first book, 7 years to write the second book, and this one, I don't know, I technically been out for a couple of years now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it that you don't have the time to write it, or is it you have trouble getting down and writing it?
Well, it's both.
Okay.
It's both. I mean, it's very, I have to really, like, piss around territory to finally get some time where I'm like, no, this is the day that I'm writing.
And when the day of the writing comes, do you write?
Sometimes, but a lot of times I find myself just sitting staring at blank paper or the keyboard.
That's interesting because that never happens to me. I'll find a lot of ways to just kind of like fuck around and not write. But when I need to write, I write.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing about you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it? You know, I was talking to Ken Lezebnik about this because Ken Lezebnik is also
a writer
and very prolific. Like me, he's written a lot for television.
Yeah.
And like when you're on a deadline like that, you just get good at just cranking shit out.
Huh. So here I am laying bare the fact that I have a hard time.
Right. And I'm just kind of making you feel small, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, I have a feeling that if I were laying on the ground bleeding.
Right.
And
I would say I never bleed.
And I needed. And I needed a bandage.
Yeah.
You would come over and say, boy, Poundstone's a funny name.
I would give you.
Yes. That's badinage. I need a bandage.
Well, I need a new house. No, bandage. All right. Well, we have someone here who might be able to talk you through your writer's block. Francesco Gaccio is a graduate writing coach. I love your name, Francesco. Is a graduate writing coach at USC's Annenberg School of Communication. She's been teaching and tutoring since 2006, which is around the time you started your second book.
Yeah.
And is currently a doctoral candidate in English. Please welcome Francesca Gaccio. Welcome, Francesca.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here.
Now, let's start with the basics. What is writer's block, or is it a couple of things?
A writer's block is sort of a catch-all term that we use to describe barriers to writing, and those barriers could be different things. It could be emotional, it could be sort of practical, or it could be a combination of both and all kinds of other things.
Okay.
So it's sort of a very broad term to describe barriers that stop one from writing or starting or picking up a writing task.
Okay, and why is it called writer's block and not writestipation?
Writes a bit, probably because it does not sound as good. But
oh, okay.
I think we call it block. It kind of is a quite modern term. And our first sort of example of it is like 1800s when someone called it sort of like a block. Like it's something that is blocking this just fountain of creativity and words. It's sort of this
there's
imagery.
Actually a block. There's a stopper.
There's
in
a stopper in
is,
the
is,
fountain.
Is that a biochemical thing that we've discovered in modern times?
Yes and no. People are trying to figure out sort of cognitively how writer's block sort of comes about or where it comes from, what part
They've
of the brain.
They've probably discovered it. They just haven't been able to write it down. Right. That's my guess. Right. Every time they go to write about writer's block, just something stops them.
I'm working on this study for years. I know I can help people.
It's so frustrating when you want to write and you can't write. Now, I'm sort of pleased in a way to hear that you say the phrase came about in the 1800s, because I think of it as a modern problem.
Well, the concept of writer's block is having sort of a psychoanalytic, psychological influence or
barrier.
It's quite modern. It's like from the 50s. But the idea of writer's block is quite old. Samuel Taylor Coleridge wrote when he was 32, after he had written all of his great poetry, lamenting the fact that he hadn't written in like a year, or that he only wrote a month's worth of poetry in the span of a year, and sort of like, it's over. Like, my life, my creativity has sort of dried up.
Right.
And he never wrote poetry again. He wrote all kinds of other things, but he never really came back to poetry.
And, wow.
So his writer's block was... He didn't get over it. He didn't get like a coach of some sort and work through it. He didn't.
No, I think his writer's block was quite specific to a genre of writing.
So. He lost his poetry.
He lost his poetic
muse. Apparently, I have huge poetry writer's block.
Now let's get to a specific poetry.
Yeah,
I've written poetry.
And my
I'm
country,
ashamed of it.
My country western song writer's block is overwhelming.
Yeah.
Yeah, because. Nothing. No.
Yeah. But so, there's specific writer's block, and there's just the I can't write stuff. So what I want to do is I want to bring on Patient A. She's a podcast host, but we'll disguise her voice so that you don't know who she is.
Yeah.
And welcome, Patient A. Why don't you describe what your specific problems with writing is like?
Well, I think...
you don't have a schedule, but...
Well, yeah, I don't have a writing
welcome
schedule.
Welcome, Patient A.
Thank you very much. I think I'll disguise my voice. I don't have a writing schedule, but I often long to write, but sifting litter boxes and making a living has to come first. And I'm so fucking busy, I feel frustrated most of the time. Then, when all is right with the world and I finally get a chunk of time to write, I don't have a thought in my head. Is there a technique for combating that is my question.
Yes. So you can try.
Only Samuel, what's his name, had you?
Taylor Coleridge.
Taylor, was it Taylor?
Samuel Coleridge. Taylor Thomas.
Yeah. Not Samuel Taylor
it was
Thomas.
Coleridge. It was Coleridge.
He was on Home Improvement, wasn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Funning with you. But go ahead, but please, go ahead with your answer.
Sorry.
Sorry, I just poundstoned for a minute.
He was engaging in some badinage. That happens. all right, so sorry to interrupt. So there is a remedy?
There are ways that you can try depending on what you respond to the most. You can try free writing. I advise a lot of students if they're kind of just coming into writing after a long pause from it or long break from it to just kind of jog your memory from where you were the last time you were writing to kind of get fresh ideas or even old ideas, but kind of rework them. Free writing could be really helpful to just kind of get you started.
Do you free write?
I don't free write.
Okay.
I think it's because I feel the pressure of time so much.
But like if you're not writing useful stuff, you're not writing at all, and then you end up not writing at all?
Exactly.
Okay.
It's as if you were on my shoulder every day while I try to do this. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's exactly the feeling that I have.
Okay, so what I'm hearing Francesca say is that maybe... you should go ahead and write the useless stuff so that the useful stuff will come out.
Yeah, a lot of times writing through writer's block, a lot of writers sort of talk about having writer's block as not a thing, not a real thing. A lot of writers will talk about writing through a writer's block. So even if it's the ugliest sentence, even if it sounds really stupid as you type it down, or even if you're just writing, this is really stupid, I have no thoughts that I want to write, the act of writing and the act of getting thoughts on page, on paper, on page, or on screen can be really useful to just get the juices flowing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I like that idea.
Yeah, well, yeah. Maybe you should do that.
I might. Is there another technique?
Another technique. Well, it was to make writing a habit, which I know would be difficult.
To make writing a habit. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have 13 cats. Yeah.
Right. You got to make sifting a habit first.
Sift four times a day.
Four times a day?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You could only get them to all go at once.
Oh, yeah. I know. You know what would really be great is if I could find some sort of use for cat pee.
Right.
And I'd be so rich, I could have someone else sift for me.
Right.
And all the time in the world to write.
Right. You'd corner the
engage in whatever badinage I felt.
But we don't live in that world, Paula.
I could free badinage. Okay. All right. So...
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey, listener, it's Zach Harper, Amin El-Hassan, and Anthony Mays of Cinephobe. You may be asking yourself, what is Cinephobe? Amin, would you like to fill in the people?
Cinephobe is the podcast where Zach and I watch movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes and try to ascertain.
Oh, we're trying to ascertain?
Yes.
Okay. Ascertain.
Whether or not they're accurately poorly rated, or maybe they didn't get a fair shake. Cinephobe, produced by this guy, Anthony Mays.
Hey, that's me. I produced this show. I also watch the movies, even though that wasn't included in the description, and I also ascertain. This month is... Wow!
Whoa!
Oh, Maze, why'd you say that? Supercharge it. So that this promo can remain evergreen.
I feel like explaining a little bit more.
In 60 seconds?
I don't know. Maybe I don't bring attention to it. Assuring people like, look, if you listen, you're going to get it. Just give it time.
That's a good promo. Just listen to it.
Give it time.
You'll figure it out.
Is this the promo right now?
Isn't it?
Okay, I think we got it.
Cinephobe.
Wherever you get podcasts.
Jesus fucks.
Get ready for the miracle of Mega, a comedy podcast from the staff of a fictional mega church.
And not only does he fuck, but he's the best at it.
I'm Holly Loren.
And I'm Greg Hess.
Our characters, Hallie and Gray, welcome a new guest each week, played by some of the biggest names in comedy and podcasting.
Like Scott Aukerman, Lauren Lapkus, Paul Scheer, Jason Mantzoukas, Cecily Strong, and Duncan Trussell.
I just love to think about that, the light shining down on all those corpses in the water and Noah just going by and maybe a mom being like, please, we're running out of energy. Can you please let us on the boat?
It's completely improvised and it's devilishly funny.
Is there any question you have for us about, you know, what it means to live a life in Christ?
I guess, how much do you think is bullshit?
There's a new episode every Sunday.
Listen and subscribe to Mega, wherever you get your podcasts.
Best I ever had. Best I y'all can do it. Y'all can do it. Y'all sing along. You know what I'm saying? Here go. Jesus, you the best.
Jesus, you're the best.
You to be the best.
Jesus, you're the best.
You okay, never mind.
Best I ever had. Best wow. I ever had.
Yeah, so yeah, I like the idea of having a schedule of writing, but it just, you know, and then I feel like a loser because I can't stick to the schedule
of
writing.
That is also another facet of writer's block, sort of this pressure and
shame.
Sort of this shame and anxiety and how that kind of rolls
into
a bigger...
So maybe I shouldn't
be
doing it naked. Maybe that's...
Yeah.
It's the naked
in
writing
front of
that's...
full-length mirror.
Yeah, that's what screwed me up.
You shouldn't do that.
Yeah, while eating potato salad.
Right.
Yeah, that's...
Oh, God, and it falls on you. And
yeah,
it's,
that's
yeah.
a big mistake.
Looking
right
at going,
there.
What's become of me?
Yeah. Potato salad on one side and then thick pancakes with syrup and butter on the other side.
And you're just sitting there naked eating in front of a mirror.
Yeah. Maybe
now, Francesca,
that's a
mistake. Is that a good writing technique?
I mean, if it gets you writing, I say.
It doesn't.
Francesca. Francesca is totally supportive of anything.
Oh, wow. Whatever floats your boat.
Yeah, I could say to her right now,
whatever floats your gravy boat.
What if I was, you know, what if I, like, drowned frogs while I was doing it? She'd be, well, if it helps.
Now, let's talk about writing prompts. Not bags of frogs or anything, but back in the late 70s or early 80s, there was a box of cards called a kick in the side of the head.
Do you remember that? She's
something
probably
like that.
Too young. When I say
but
late 70s
full,
or 80s.
It was a box full of writing prompts. And nowadays you find like websites that give you writing prompts and stuff. Are those helpful?
They can be. Like I said, they can help sort of generate ideas, get your brain sort of like loosened up, opened up into the idea of writing.
There must be, and even as you speak about it, you say your brain open up. There must be a biochemical process because we are talking about it like a physical thing, mm-hmm. like the word block and open up your brain. And that is how it feels when it finally, you know, when you finally sort of push past that. So there must be a biochemical. So what I'm saying is there a drug I could take? because it sounds like there is some sort of biochemical process to writer's block.
Do you recommend drugs?
I'm not qualified to recommend any drugs. I am only a graduate writing coach.
Okay. Boy, she is good.
Wow.
But there
I don't, by the way.
You don't recommend drugs.
I don't. When people think they're more creative because they're stoned or something like
right.
that. I would beg to differ. Yeah. Anyways, I do feel like drugs aren't the only way of counteracting a biochemical process. There's exercise. Dickens used to walk. Miles and miles and miles and miles.
He would write insufferably long books.
Yeah, he wrote like 20 miles a day.
Right.
He would walk sometimes 20 miles a day.
Which is exactly how I feel when I try to take on like Bleak House.
I love Bleak House.
Yeah, well, you have time to do it because you're not writing.
Yeah, I back up and reread parts of Bleak House. I try to use it as a prompt.
So my morning prompt is going to be Bleak House.
Yeah, yeah.
And 3 weeks later, now I'm ready to start.
Yeah, that slows me down. Yeah. I love Charles Dickens.
Does exercise help? You're going to say maybe.
I mean, it could. Yeah, it could. Yeah. I mean, as far as the biochemical aspect of it, there have been studies where they're looking not necessarily at writer's block,
did they take like several writers who couldn't write and put them in chairs with like electrodes on their heads?
Yeah, I love
and
that
then
idea.
They would try to write and they'd be like, I can't.
Is that what they did?
Not quite. They were tracing sort of the blood flow to the different parts of the brain.
Blood flow. That's what I need.
Right.
You know, I've been wearing a badinage on my head while I write.
That's a tourniquet.
Bandage. I like how you took the words from badinage and turned it into tourniquet.
Yeah, there we go.
All right. Sorry, I interrupted again. Okay, so There are studies where they check the blood flow of
the blood
brain.
Flow to the brain, and they found that. So they did a study where they gave three words to the participants, and they were asked to form a story around those three words. And they saw that the parts of the brain that lit up were the ones, as we would expect, related to how we process language, the left side of the prefrontal cortex. But then they also saw that the right side of the brain was also lighting up, which is related more to how we connect dissimilar concepts to each other.
Okay.
So where we kind of generate ideas from like, this is a green cup and this is a blue house. What's the relationship between the two? And right. sort of this story creation part of our brains.
Yeah.
And so they inferred that, you know, writer's block might be related to a similar sort of dysfunction or like cognitive overload in that part of the brain.
Oh, okay. In the part of the brain that forms the association.
Yes.
Right. The right brain.
I mean, I think I've told you before that when I'm trying to remember something sometimes, like particularly a conversation with my daughter one time, I said, who's that actor, the really good-looking guy? He was in To Kill a Mockingbird. It starts with an M. And she said, Gregory Peck. And I said, yeah. Is that kind of thinking that you were just referring to?
I would say probably no. But I'll let Francesca answer this.
That says a lot more about recall or... Sort of memory storage.
But the way things connect in my brain, sometimes people can't understand. Like Adam often thinks I'm switching topics. And really in my head, I'm not switching topics.
Right. But in fact, you are.
No, not if not if you're in my
head,
you know. In the way that I think my lazy river. The flow of my brain makes these things totally related, whereas you think I'm skipping around.
It feels a little disjointed, but I'm aware that it makes sense to you, if that's any help.
You can tell by the happy look on my face.
Yeah, when you're babbling on.
Yeah. Yeah. Babbling on. Yeah. You see the respect.
Yeah. No. I have to say, I do get that your thoughts all connect.
Yeah. Mostly
just,
they
just
do.
Just not in an orderly fashion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So...
As a but podcast there's no, co-host, so that becomes a problem.
I thought that
sometimes.
What you were describing of these two sides of the brain was that this sort of connections that other people don't see. But did I misunderstand what you were saying?
No, and what you're describing sort of associative thinking. Like, this made me think of
this
other
sociopath.
Thing.
I'm so glad it was associative thinking and not sociopath. I feel better. Associative thinking.
Associative thinking.
Yeah.
That's you do that.
What does that mean?
So it's when you kind of think of an idea that makes you think of something else, yeah, where the connections or the...
That's why her middle name it is might appear thinking, Poundstone.
It might appear disjointed to others, but in your head, there's a link.
Yeah, exactly.
And that could be very helpful in sort of story generation and thinking about how one concept relates to another in a different way that most people might not think about. And so that is creative thought.
Maybe that's creative thought. To your writer's block at times, in that you're such an associative thinker that when you sit down to do a particular task, it's a little more difficult.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right.
I'm trying to write, and I just keep thinking about my career in hematology.
Right, but you don't, in point of fact, have.
Thinking. All right, so you think writing prompts are sometimes helpful. And you started to say before I rudely interrupted that there have been studies, and it has something to do with the blood flow. Am I right about that?
Yes.
The blood flow in the creative thinker's brain.
Right. So, so you need to get your blood flowing a little bit.
Got
to
get my blood flowing. Adam was talking earlier about this thing of writing on a deadline.
Yeah. I wanted to get to that. Yeah.
Are there people who respond well to deadlines and people who don't?
Yes and no. I think there are people who are motivated by deadlines, and that sort of gets them cranking out all the text or the content that they need to make. Other people are intimidated by it, and so they find different ways to manage deadlines, whether it means breaking things down into smaller tasks and then setting up smaller, more manageable deadlines. So it depends on, you know, if you respond to pressure or you respond to, you know, a different kind of motivation.
I love deadlines. I mean, when I know something has to get out the door, that thing gets out the door.
Do you think that it impedes people creatively, though? I mean, it's one thing to get some words down on a piece of paper and say, there, did it. Mm-hmm. And it's another thing to really, you know, create something that has great quality.
No, it isn't. Oh, there's my problem.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I see. That's why I'm not good at writing.
When I was in like middle school or junior high, we used to have this class. I forget what it was, but the teacher wanted us to journal, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think I, well, two things. A, I was lazy. And B, I just felt like, and she would say, I'm not going to read your journals. I'm just going to open it and make sure you've written, but I'm not going to read. You write whatever you want. And so I would just write words, not connected
random words
in any way. Yeah.
Did she ever find you out?
She didn't. But if she had, I'd be like, aha, you were reading it. Good thing I didn't put my personal thoughts.
Well, you know, that's a form of free writing that Francesca was talking about just moments ago.
Yeah.
You could pretend that you're still trying to get revenge on that teacher and maybe get your creative juices going.
Yeah, maybe that's the way to do it. But I know, but wait, I want to go back to this idea about the difference in quality, because do you think there are books that were done on a deadline that could have been better if there was not a deadline involved?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer, because Dickens wrote on a deadline every week for his serialized newspaper.
I have
that's
a theory about Dickens.
That's how we
Dickens
have it.
Was paid by the word. And I have a theory that, especially because oftentimes...
He was putting on a deck?
Right, exactly. I have a theory about Dickens that the beginning of his chapters are sometimes very, very wordy, very, very descriptive in a way that you're like, okay, I'm not sure he needed to do all of that. And I have a theory that he would go, okay, just paid the rent there, and now I'm going to tell the story.
It's possible. Yeah. I want to submit another theory because, as you know, my late mother was a prolific novelist. She wrote a lot of historical romances. And when she would read the beginnings of a book to me, I started noticing, and then her editor started noticing, that every book started with several pages of weather.
Really?
And finally, like, her editor over at Signet New American Library is like, you just gotta, you know, write that weather stuff and then don't send it to me. Start on page 6, because that's where your book starts.
Oh,
that's
wow.
Just kind of, so yeah. She would get herself psyched into the novel by just really setting the scene weather-wise.
Uh-huh. So she did a little free writing.
She wasn't being paid by the word.
She was like, so she did a little free writing just to get the juices going. And
but it was beautiful, moody stuff about the, I mean, it wasn't just, you know, it wasn't just the Weather Channel report.
Yeah. Was she like that? Like, as your mom, would she open the door in the morning and go, Adam, it's so lovely out here. There's a mist and,
she was not
it's hanging low in the air and there's a feeling about the town of.
She did not engage in meteorological badinage. That was not her thing.
No. What I was thinking about was Grapes of Wrath. Grapes of Wrath has the strangest ending, and in many ways, very, very unsatisfying. I mean, obviously, it's not a happy ending. There's almost no resolve at all, in Grapes of Wrath. But the weirdest thing is the very last thing that happens in Grapes of Wrath after the Jodes have, you know, their family has been pared down by...
Spoiler alert, listeners.
Yeah, by the difficulties of traveling to California from Oklahoma during the Dust Bowl. They were staying in a boxcar, as you recall. There was flooding.
I'm seeing Francisca Rosa, not recalling
Rosa this. Sharon. Rosa, no, she is. She's recalling. Rosa Sharon, I'll help you. The weather was difficult.
Oh, yes, I remember.
Yeah, there was flooding. Rosa Sharon had just given birth to a stillborn baby. The waters were rising. They realize they have to get out of the boxcar. They walk up a hill. They find a barn. They go in the barn. There's a man starving to death, and Rosa Sharon breastfeeds the man. Everybody else leaves her. Ma tells her she has to. Rosa Sharon breastfeeds the starving man, and the last line is, a mysterious smile came across Rosa Sharon's face.
Yeah, that's a weird ending.
That is a weird ending.
Yeah.
And
you know what
me,
I love about it, though, is that you could tack that ending onto just about any book.
Honestly.
Yeah.
But to me, that's the editor saying, John, it's got to be in by today. It's got to, how much more do you have to do on this? You know what? Just finish it. And he went, okay. Rosa Sharon, mysterious smile came over Rosa Sharon's face. I mean, he clearly did not complete what happens after she breastfed the man.
Now, Francesca, I'm going to give you a moment to, an opportunity to comment on that, but also stipulate that you do not have to.
Well, here's the other thing.
I am going to give her a moment, Paul. You can't, here's the other thing when we're giving it. Francesca, what say you about that?
I'm not sure.
Over to you, Poundstone.
I got it. Let me just tell the listeners: a mysterious smile came over Francesca's face.
Right.
It's a weird ending, and it's clearly written by a man too, by the way, because there's not a woman in the world who would think that after breastfeeding a starving man, a mysterious smile crept over any character's face. That is the thought of a man, hands down, is it not?
It's not the thought of this man.
No, you're not. That doesn't occur to you?
No.
Yeah.
No, it would never have occurred to me to write that ending, but I think I'm going to tack that onto all my books at this point.
Yeah, a mysterious smile.
It's not just a mysterious smile. It's the idea that here's a starving man, all we have is my daughter's breast milk. That's a little weird.
Yeah.
Because I don't see how that's going to help that starving man.
Well, unless it becomes a regular thing.
Right. But, you know, again, I mean, like, breast milk is generally about enough for an infant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, but it may be produced based on, you know.
Oh, the book ends there, so we never find out if they develop
breastfeeding relationship. We never know if that works.
Francesca, do you have anything on this stuff? Because I feel like we've wandered far and far afield.
I don't think we have.
Can a man subsist on breast milk or a woman for that? Maybe if you could, you know, somehow fabricated into breast cheese and stuff. Other breast dairy products.
Fromage à breast.
I'm guessing.
The detective came and knocked on the door. And I said, is it Renee? And he just gave me that solemn look.
It was the worst day ever.
The Proof Podcast is back with a new case and a new season. 23 years ago, 18-year-old Renee Ramos went missing. Her body was later found in an empty Home Depot building on the edge of town.
I don't think that they arrested the right people. It's about time somebody's trying to do something.
She had a black eye about 2 weeks before she was murdered.
They are involved. They definitely had her body and her backpack.
You know people are going to judge you, right?
Of course. They're judging me now. They've been judging me damn near my whole life.
You can listen now to season 2 of Proof wherever you get your podcasts and follow along with us as we reinvestigate the murder at the warehouse.
I have to ask, did you kill Renee?
All right. We've walked this interview down the plank at this point.
I think this is a good point to bring up that female lemurs can drink from their own breasts.
Can they?
Yes. They're long and tubular, and they just flip them up and have a pull.
Do they really?
Yeah, I've seen it.
All right, yeah. I'm ready to end this
right
here.
And then a mysterious smile comes over their faces.
The end. That's an appropriate place to end it. Thank you, Francesca Gaccio, for getting us unblocked. Paula, based on that, what advice can you give our listeners about writer's block?
Omar Leva, could I have a little background music for my summary about writer's block? I have to finish this summary about writer's block in just a couple of minutes. Some people are motivated by deadlines. I don't think I am. But another method of combating writer's block is free writing. I'm sitting in the studio with Adam Felber, Tony Anita Hull, Omar the House Band, Ray Horseman, Ken Lezebnik, Bonnie Burns, and my dog Sirius. There is a fan giving out more noise than comfort behind me, and a microphone wearing a clown nose right in front of my face. I haven't peed in 30 minutes or so, and yet I need to. I wonder if I have a bladder problem or I'm just getting older. Is everyone my age about to pee all of the time? I should do a podcast from the restroom at the airport. I could just interview the woman in the stall next to me, and the guest is kind of catch-as-catch-can. Hi, it's me, Paula Poundstone. Down here. The microphone is down here. Do you know what writer's block is? I don't think free writing helps me.
All right. Francesca Gaccio is the graduate writing coach at USC's Annenberg School of Communications. Francesca, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Francesca.
All right. Coming up next, oops, I made a terrible mistake. Our corrections department will set something straight. And Ken Lezebnik's America takes us cross country again. That's coming up right after this. The cat of the week is Mooncake from Kitchener, Ontario. Thank you, House Band Omar Leva. Man, I just love having you here. Paula, we pride ourselves, you and me, on being a strictly factual podcast, right?
Absolutely, yes.
So when we make an error, unlike other podcasts, we own up to it.
Unlike other podcasts, unlike almost everyone in the nation, almost like
the
entire administration leading the country, right. Yes.
Which means it's time for, oops, I made a terrible mistake. Okay. I now feel like I've made another mistake.
All right. I thought that was fantastic. So that's a very fanfare I want. Every time I'm introduced.
So, Paula, we both made a mistake, or did we, when we tried to pronounce your vocabulary word, viva voce.
No, it's viva voci.
Now, we argued about this. And
yes,
I think
we
reignited the argument the next week. We had some badinage, but it was a full-on argument, too.
Yeah.
Because I believe that it was... I punched
you right in the fucking head
you
over
did.
This.
You punched me in the head.
Yeah,
and,
you had it coming, man, because you were saying viva voce.
You said it was vivoci or something.
No,
or...
I say it's, excuse me, I take it, it's not viva. It's viva voci.
Wow, and to me, I didn't know for a fact that it sounded wrong. I thought it was more like a viva voce kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's
viva voci.
Well, look, listener Christian
Brady.
What
do you think, I made it up? I looked it up in the dictionary and had the pronunciation.
Right, but your dictionary doesn't have a cover, right? I'm guessing it might be the great big book of mispronunciation.
No,
is what's
true.
Written on the cover. Because listener Christian Brady posted on Facebook that the word is pronounced viva voce.
Mm-hmm.
That's how
Christian pronounce it.
Yeah,
his friends.
He wrote, viva voce is what we call the oral defense of your doctorate at University of Oxford. I defended mine back in 1998 in Oriental Studies.
Oriental Studies?
Well, that's what they called it in 1998.
Whoa! That is going back a ways.
Yeah, but that's what he called it.
Huh.
Viva voce.
Yeah. And what he doesn't say is that he got a C.
And it was because of egregious mispronunciation.
Yeah. As people were listening to his presentation,
you know,
they circled that word and they put a little, you know, miss beside. They said they put a see me.
See, we do agree that this show should be factually accurate.
Yes.
But we often don't agree on what those facts are.
Well,
even given an
explanation. Remind me and I'll bring the dictionary in.
Yeah, bring the dictionary
in. Okay, here's why I know that it's viva voce.
Okay.
Because... I didn't make it up. I wrote the pronunciation down as I read it. And there's no way I could see if I just wrote the word down and didn't write down the pronunciation. But I wrote the pronunciation down.
But you came up with Vosi as your pronunciation.
It's Viva Vosi.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
And I like that you don't. And that's the difference between me and you, is because like I often will back down. And that brings us to our next one.
Yeah.
Here's
I just want to say to Christian Brady.
Yeah.
Thank you for being a listener. And there's no shame in being wrong.
Apparently there is on somebody's part.
I'm not wrong. It's Viva Vosi. It's possible that, you know, there's two different dictionary. One dictionary feels one way. It's Hatfields and McCoys, which means, by the way, that Christian and I have to break up. But I'm telling you, I wrote it. I'm going to bring it in.
So you're saying you were corrected by a listener and you're saying fake news.
No, I would never say something that Trump says.
Okay. All right, so here's a mistake I made, and it's gotten me some blowback, right? It was, again, related to one of your vocabulary words, rotundity.
Rotundity,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think I said at one point, most drag queens are kind of svelte, and you followed up by saying, what?
Yeah.
You called me on it right away.
Yeah.
And, you know, you were right. And, in fact, on that show, I then said, I withdraw that. I'm just saying that most I've
because
seen-
I pointed out, why would you know the size of lots and lot of every drag queen.
And it turns
out you've gone around the country.
No, I
haven't. On a little float that you have.
Yeah.
It's a wheelie thing with flowers on top that you go around the country on.
Playing music that I hope will attract drag queens.
You go into clubs with drag queens and measure them.
Yeah.
I was basing
it on a very limited data set.
Yeah.
Like the time in the 90s when my friend and I happened to wander into Marie's Crisis Cafe and it was time for their Easter bonnet competition.
That was a
thin bunch of drag queens. But I was absolutely wrong. And I said so at the time. But it's still, there's blowback coming on.
Yeah.
You
pissed off Dumplin' Honeychild.
Listener Dumplin' Honeychild, God bless you, took note and posted this on our Facebook community tab. Quote, there are plenty of rotund drag queens, Adam Felber, you silly man. And Dumplin' included a photo adding, and this one would never be referred to as also there.
It's true, man. You
see
that.
I've seen her picture, and she is not just also there.
Yeah,
she is 100% there.
Yes.
And I'm going to apologize again.
She is the main there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an amazing picture. Is it up on our website? It's up on our Facebook page. So definitely take a look at Little Dumplin' Honeychild. And thank you so much for writing in. And Paula, that's what it looks like when somebody admits they were wrong.
If I was wrong, I'd gladly admit it. It's Viva Vosi. Viva Vosi.
Lastly, and I don't know if this is a terrible mistake or if you were just at a loss for words, but your struggle to describe our show was actually captured on tape on another show.
Yeah, I do a lot of interviews and radio shows and podcasts, and I often try to describe our show, and I've just never been able to do it adequately.
Yeah, we've been having that contest. People have been suggesting things, and let's listen to how well you did here.
Okay.
Besides the stand-up, what else are you doing these days in the NPR show?
I know this does not separate me from the rest of the pack any more than does breathing oxygen and not eating my young. But I do have a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I have a podcast called Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, and it is a comedy podcast wherein we share also information. We have experts in different fields come on and talk to us about whatever may be relevant, frankly, to my life. For example, we've been exploring the mold in my bedroom closet for a while now, several aspects of it. I don't think it's good. The mold, not the podcast.
Yeah. Wouldn't immediately go on their computer to listen.
I spent a lot of time doing that.
And
I work the road. I'm out two or three nights a weekend, and I do one night in each place, and I'm off again. So mostly what I do is pack and fly.
Wow. Yeah, okay. I was telling my whole life.
Wow. And that was your answer to your question, what's your podcast about?
Yeah.
Now you're worried about the mold in your closet, and you're also on the road.
Yeah, compelling. That description is compelling.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think just from playing that now, we're going to get extra tune-in.
Really? I was thinking
people
that
people are
going
to go back and re-listen to this episode just so they can hear that description again.
I honestly think it's more likely to cost us listeners.
You think people
are going to just... Oh, now that she frames it like that, why am I wasting my time on this podcast?
Yeah, so that... This is why we've turned to the listeners themselves and asked people who have a a concise, and that's hard for me, a concise and compelling description of our podcast to post it up on our Facebook page.
Yes, yeah, send it in or email it to us at nobodylistenstopaulapoundstone@gmail.com because clearly we need help with a concise, snappy, succinct description of our show, and there just may be a bar of Paula Poundstone autographed hotel soap in it for you.
You know, you always forget the adjective. It's fresh hotel soap.
What?
Yeah, it's fresh hotel soap.
How do you know? You're stealing it from a hotel room.
Well,
does it
no,
have
I
an expiration
went, no,
date
it's,
on it? It's fresh in that you
sealed,
just took it.
Is my point. I don't want people to think like I bathe with it, and then I'm like, yeah, I have this.
There's a certain segment of our listenership that would like that.
Tony Anita Hall, who was the listener that we sent, that we rewarded them because they was it? Did they have a description? Is that what it was?
Yes.
Somebody had a terrific description.
Which
really
you did not use
it.
In that aforementioned interview.
No, that must have been a long time ago. And and so we sent them a hotel soap, and then they wrote to us and told us that it came postage due. Right. And that was an oversight on our part. Yeah, that will not happen again.
That was our bad. That's definitely in the oops, I made a terrible mistake
Who was
department.
The guy? What was his name?
It was Scott Franciscus, which so, now you're suddenly on this page where we're just going to have Scott Franciscus pay for all our shit.
Yeah,
now.
He's paying any shipping that we do. The bill
Franciscus
for it goes
is the
directly
shipping guy now. Yeah,
to Scott Franciscus.
It's bad enough that we sent it soap postage due. Now we're billing him.
I love that,
all right.
Scott Franciscus.
Well, keep those descriptions coming, everybody. And Paula, what's...
He is our Deutsche Bank.
He is our Deutsche Bank, when nobody else would take a risk on us. Paula, what's coming up for you?
Well, on August 16th, Adam, I'm going to be at the Cape Cod Melody Tent in Hyannis, Massachusetts. And on August 17th, I'm going to be at the Clayton Opera House in, guess where? Clayton, New York.
Wait, did you say Clayton, New York?
Yeah.
Well, we were about to launch into Ken Lezebnik's America, you know, that travelogue segment we've
yes.
been doing. And by outstanding coincidence, this week, Ken Lezebnik is taking us to Clayton, New York. What are the odds?
That is such a freakish coincidence.
It's staggering. Let's start the road trip we call... Ken Lezebnik's America.
You kids, get in the fucking car.
Ready for a road trip, everyone?
Get that dog out of there. We're not taking that dog.
I'm so excited to drive us up scenic Highway 12 to the little town of Clayton on the St. Lawrence River.
Oh.
Hey, what's the matter? Don't you love upstate New York?
All I care about is getting my commemorative spoon of the Thousand Islands.
We'll get you that spoon, Janice. I know you want to add to your collection of precious Americana. Timmy, Nellie, got your seatbelts buckled?
I always do. Timmy, buckle up for safety.
I go to hell, Nellie. Nervous Nelly, nervous Nelly.
Shut your cake hole. Buckle the damn belt.
If he does it too tight, he gets car sick.
I do not.
Do too.
Do not.
Do too.
Do not.
Too.
Kids, improve your badinage.
You try having lighthearted banter with a dork.
Mom, he called me a dork, but Timmy's the one who gets car sick.
I got the big roasting pan ready if anyone gets car sick.
Or has to pee. Bladder, gladder, Nelly.
Hey, look, kids, we're approaching Clayton. It's a quintessential Thousand Islands River Village.
I want my commemorative spoon.
Janice, I bet they have great commemorative spoons here. They might celebrate famous residents of Clayton like Albert and Joe Bouchard, founding members of the band Blue Oyster Cult.
They grew up here? You think they have a Blue Oyster Cult commemorative spoon?
Could be. I'm so excited about visiting the antique boat museum.
Do we have to? I'm hungry.
Don't let him eat the car. It's a disaster waiting to happen.
Hey, you know, we're in the birthplace of Thousand Island dressing. Hey, look, there's a restaurant selling salads featuring Thousand Island dressing. I'll pull over.
They don't need a fucking salad. I just want to get my spoon.
I'm so hungry. Food! Food! Food!
Hey, Timmy,
food!
Timmy, food! Here you go. Look, it's a nice...
Food!
It's a good look. Here it is. It's a nice salad covered with the signature Thousand Island dressing.
Whatever. I'm starved.
Okay. Kids, all buckled up. Let's hit the road again. Off to the St. Lawrence River and the Antique Boat Museum. Little curvy here. Oh, sorry.
Oh.
Oh, no.
Oh, look. We're passing by the Clayton Opera House. It's an historic brick structure overlooking the St. Lawrence River. Hey, look, kids. They're advertising an appearance by legendary comedian Paula Poundstone on August 17th. Gosh, I'd love to get tickets.
I don't give a shit! Slow down!
He's gonna hurl!
Give him the roasting pan.
Hurry!
Oh, sweet Jesus!
Take the fucking roasting pan!
I dropped it!
Damn it, Nelly!
That fucking dressing!
Oh no, it's gonna be a Thousand Island upchuck!
Timmy, Timmy, hold on, hold on. I'll pull up in front of the Opera House. Look, we can get our Poundstone tickets.
Oh, holy shit! It's so gross.
The mayonnaise! The pickles!
Oh, the finely diced onions! They're hurling all over the dashboard! Well, Janice, I see an antique shop across the street. Maybe, you know, you could get your commemorative blue oyster cult spoon while I get a bottle of Mr. Clean and wipe this up.
A dog beat you to it.
Perhaps another day you'll get your commemorative blue oyster cult spoon, Janice. And maybe someday we'll see iconic comedian Paula Poundstone at the Clayton Opera House. But for now, let's drive on.
On this day in unremarkable history, Ulysses S. Grant said, "It's not really civil if people are shooting at each other, is it?"
Hey, I'm Janet Varney, and like many of you, some more recent than others, I used to be a teenager. In fact, just about all of my friends were too, including wonderful women like Allison Brie.
I'm dead center on the balance beam. And this is like a big gym. All the kids' parents are there watching. I have to stop, like, you know, when you have to pee so bad and you can't even move. And then I just go. I just pee right in the middle of the high balance beam.
So join me every week on the JV Club podcast, where I speak with complicated, funny, messy humans as we reminisce about our adolescences and how they led us to becoming who we are. Find it every Thursday on Maximum Fun.
Have you ever watched a movie so bad you just needed to talk to somebody about it?
Well, here at the Flophouse, we watch a bad movie and then talk about it.
Yeah, you don't have to do anything. We'll watch it and we'll talk it. We do the hard work.
Featuring the beautiful vocal talents of Dan McCoy,
Stuart Wellington,
and me, America's Rascal, Elliot Kalin.
New episodes every other Saturday at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts, dude. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Welcome back, all you nobodies. Now, Paula, any message this week for the fans listening to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone?
Well,
he asked with some dread in his voice.
Adam, I don't have to tell you how much I enjoy doing our podcast.
I love it too, Paula.
I know you do too. And when I'm performing around the country, people come up to me and tell me that they are nobodies who listen to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone.
Yeah.
It makes me so happy. The truth is, though, that we can only continue to make our podcast if our listenership continues to grow.
Yeah, it sounds like you're winding up towards another sample listeners.
Well, I know dialogue. Many listeners aren't sure how to talk to their friends and loved ones
right.
about listening to the podcast. So I've written, you're correct, Adam, some simple sample dialogue that I think might help. Try this.
Okay.
Listener's friend, oh my God, I saw you on the Orlando Channel 5 news last night. I couldn't believe it was you trapped on your kitchen counter by an alligator that had wandered in through your open doorway. Are you okay? Listener, I'm fine, thanks. Listener's friend, oh my God, I'd be freaking out if I was you. The cops had to come. An animal rescue and your kids and husband had to stay at a neighbor's until they could catch the thing around the mouth with that rope with a loop on it. I'd have been freaking out if it was me. I'd have been freaking out, but you seem so calm. Listener, I was calm. Listener's friend, yeah, I know, but how is that possible? I mean, you were trapped by an alligator, and the cops had to come in the animal rescue, and it took forever to get the rope with the loop on the end around its mouth because it was snapping all over the place like that.
I think we get it.
Listener, I'm going to tell you something I've never known how to tell you before.
Right.
I listen to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, the comedy podcast. An hour or so of laughs each week keeps me calm in the face of daily stress. The hardest part is getting time alone to listen. Sometimes I listen during my long commute to work. Sometimes I listen while I clean the house. And sometimes I force my kid and my husband out of the house just to get some time to listen. This time I put a trail of huge chunks of raw meat going from the man-made pond in the center of the apartment complex to our place, and I left the door open. Listener's friend, boy, you must really love that podcast. I'm going to try it.
Okay.
So this, now, I think, will bring so many more listeners.
Well,
there was an alligator in the lake in Chicago.
Yes, there was. So what you're saying is,
so that's any another
listener
few
of
listeners.
Our podcast who finds themselves calmed by our podcast,
yes,
and then is in a dangerous situation, might do a dialogue that is something like this, though not specifically this.
No, let me back up. Maybe you didn't understand it.
No, I think
so. What's happening is,
yeah, I know. I get the plot.
So there was an alligator, and she was trapped on her counter, and her friend, the listener's friend, saw her.
But
on
for
the Channel
actual
5
listeners out there,
news.
They can all take a lesson that you're saying it's a calming thing, and if you're in a dangerous situation, you might be able to tell your friend, "Hey, I was in a dangerous situation, not unlike having an alligator in my kitchen or being stuck on a window washing platform or,
yeah,
you know, any kind of dangerous situation." You're speaking metaphorically
here. It would keep people calm during. Yeah, I think If you need to extrapolate it out like that.
Well, I think you do. I think you really do. Especially when we got to that trail of raw chunks of meat.
Yeah, she put raw chunks of meat and left the door open so that she would be trapped on the counter.
She purposely
got
herself into a dangerous...
And that way the husband and kids had to go to the neighbor's house.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is going to bring... I think by next week, our numbers of listeners should be up.
Yeah.
Vastly.
Yeah, vastly.
Vastly.
Vastly for everybody who's been
already
on Channel 5.
We're high on Maximum Fun's list of shows.
We are one of Maximum Fun's flagship programs.
They apparently had some sort of a weekend getaway that they
Max FunCon. I saw about that on the internet.
They didn't even invite us
to. We did
to.
Not get invited to it. But we are.
They were all John Hodgman and
I don't know
Jesse.
Who was there. I'm guessing Jesse was there.
Jesse, what's Jesse?
Lezebnik. Jesse Thorne.
Jesse Thorne. Yeah. They were in tents together and zipping and unzipping.
All the fans were there, zip lines.
And there was kindling. And they were singing around the fire.
That's how I picture it. I don't really
know.
And
we were just not even invited.
Left off the guest list.
We had to find out on their website.
It's not that we weren't asked to speak or perform there because there were performances.
Yeah.
We weren't asked to come watch the performances.
Yeah. Yeah. We were. They didn't even ask us to bring a whisk broom to clean out the tent.
Right. Like, you know, it would have been insulting if they'd said, "Could you come and make breakfast for everybody?"
Yeah.
But in some ways, that would have been better.
Yeah. I wouldn't have minded that at all.
Yeah, exactly. I make a good omelet.
Yeah.
All right. Well, nobody's. Remember that our email address is nobodylistenstopaulapoundstone@gmail.com.
And you can find me and Adam on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.
All right, that's our show. Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone is hosted by Paula Poundstone and yours truly, Adam the Felber. Produced by Paula Poundstone, Adam Felber, Bonnie Burns, Ken Lezebnik, and Tony Anita Hull, who did some great acting tonight, I thought. Technical direction by Ray Horseman and mixing by Anthony Alfaro. Special thanks to tonight's house band, Omar Leiva. Great to have you back. Please come back again. And thanks again to our guest, Francesca Gaccio. This week's security muscle is provided by Ben Lezebnik's friend, Tyler Burke, and not by the late Jonah Knuckles Glickman. Transcription services for the show provided by TranscribeMe. For your special Paula Poundstone discount, use code Paula Poundstone when placing your order at TranscribeMe.com.
That's our show for tonight. Won't somebody please listen to me?
No, I took a year of simulated retching at BADA.
In order to...
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that's why they didn't invite us to that event.
I'm still steamed by that.
They didn't want to hear vomiting outside the tents at night. It's just Adam practicing.
So you're saying now it's my fault that we didn't get invited?
No, I don't think it's your fault. I think they just didn't want us.
Well, I'd say I didn't want them either, but I totally would have gone.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.